And we're live.
Hello and welcome to Beyond Richards episode 19, what we like to call the Days of High Adventure episode, as we discuss our favorite barbarian films. And with us is Nathan Kennedy and Joe Amato, and I'm Tyler Baker, and we're here to go back to the 80s, the glory days of barbarian films, pretty much the only decade of barbarian films, and just reminisce about what constitutes as the traditional barbarian film, what doesn't, and the best ones amongst that decade of glorious blades, sorcery, breast, all the great things that make a fantastic barbarian film. So we appreciate you joining us and hearing what we have to say about an extinct genre in action films.
Absolutely agree. No, you're right about that. First, let me just say thank you for everybody with your patience in the chat room. I know you guys have been waiting for, you know, a few minutes there. Sorry about that delay, but, you know, we're here now, and I see you guys already starting and chatting amongst yourselves. Christopher Dahlberg, thank you for joining us. Chris Simpson. Jake Juggalo is here. Thank you. Tamara Shipper. So, yes, I want to acknowledge every one of you guys in the chat room, and thanks for being here. And, you know, it's funny, it's what Tyler's saying is, you know, right, it's an extinct genre. I mean, even when they try to bring back, you know how they always reimagine, let's do another Conan, let's do this, like the one that recently came out, just, I don't think that was anything that anybody really flipped over, the recent Conan. When did that come out anyways? 2 years, 3 years ago?
It's
just...
it was like 2010. I was living on the
after when that Wait, movie came was out. It really that long ago?
Pretty sure.
I actually don't even know the year. I just know that...
It was 2010 or 2011 when I was living on the other side of Radford, because I remember watching the trailer and clips of it when I was living in my old apartment and just thinking, God, I'm not going to see this movie.
Oh, well, Christopher Dahlberg said 2011 in the chat. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, it's
2011, I believe, is when it came out, yeah.
Man. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if... You know, I always hate to say, you know, are we just being nostalgic? Are we living in the 80s? It's just they miss something. There's something that they're just not getting when they try these reimaginings. I mean, hell, Conan's been around forever, though. I mean, as we know, in comic book form, everything else. But, I mean, it's just there's something that's just not there. Like, in the chat room, there was even people that started off with a question, which we were actually going to address, like, what constitutes a barbarian movie? You know, what makes a barbarian movie a barbarian movie? Because, you know, sometimes you have, like, you know, magic, science fiction in some of these. Some of them, it's more mythological. Like, when you think of Clash of the Titans, do you think of that as barbarian? Or you think of that as just, you know, mythology? Yeah. And to me, there's so many different types. I mean, they were bringing up Willow. There's, I don't know, but go ahead. Nathan, why don't you start? What do you think of when you think of barbarian movies? What comes into your mind?
I would put Clash of the Titans as sort of, like, man... Yeah, I wouldn't classify that one as a barbarian film. When I think of barbarian films, I think of like minimal clothing. Like, I mean, think about it. Like the loincloths on the dudes, and you know the chicks aren't wearing much else. A lot of magic and a lot of just swordplay. That's what constitutes a barbarian film. And I actually got a question for you guys after... I'll hold on to it while you guys sort of give your takes on what makes a barbarian film.
Tyler, go ahead.
The big ones we're going to talk about, I know, not to say that this is the only subgenre of films that has a backstory of this kind, but for Conan, Red Sonja, the Beastmaster, you know, they're all three characters that have had tragedy in their younger lives, from their families being destroyed by marauders. They've either been tortured or experienced some sort of unfortunate, action upon them. Whereas, you know, like Dar with being, well, we'll get into that with the Beastmaster, but his awful beginnings as a baby and his upbringing, Red Sonja being raped and her family killed, Conan's family killed, his mom decapitated in front of him, put into slavery. You know, you kind of, these are just kind of some common denominators with barbarian films. I even think I've never seen it, but I think this is the case with that silly canon film, The Barbarians, that the barbarian men were sold into slavery and became pit fighters, you know, copy and carnage. I've never seen it, so I'm not going to sit and say I act like I know a whole lot. I'm just going by what little I know of the film. But it just kind of seemed like that's a common thing. And like Nathan said, minimal clothing for both men and women. The guys are wearing boots and a loincloth and carrying a big broadsword or a very cool looking sword of some kind. The women are wearing kind of a top that kind of is like a kind of a bra slash cover up, you know, kind of a bikini bottom, so to speak. Their dirty pillows are displayed throughout most of the film in some form or fashion.
A lot of unique outfits, yeah. A lot of unique outfits.
Cult leaders, you know, they almost consider them a higher power, or they look to a higher power, whether it's Mayax and the Beastmaster, Thulsa Doom, Queen Taramis. You've got damn it, Queen Gedrin, and Red Sonja. So it's you know, even in Dark Deathstalker, I think the villain in the first film of that is like a high and mighty wizard, so to speak.
Yeah, I can actually talk about this one because, yeah, no, like I intended to watch a lot of these films during the week, but the work schedule didn't really permit it. So I got this set here. Oh man, glare on that's kind of
There
bad
you
there.
go. There you go.
So this has got like Deathstalker 1 and 2, and then we got Barbarian Queen and the Warrior and the Sorceress. So I watched Deathstalker, which I had watched a couple years prior, and I'll talk about that later. And then since Tyler wouldn't sell me or give me his other copy of Beastmaster because he owns like three copies of it,
Oh,
they're
really?
all out of print now.
Getting Beastmaster a long time ago, and he's like, no, I think I'd rather get and then you just throw a dart at a board of movies. Nathan would choose to get whatever I was recommending, you know, and just choose whatever, you know.
Yeah,
But
we used to go to Best Buy like all the time, and he'd be like, "Hey, man, you got to pick up U-Turn. It's a great film." And I'd like have it in this big old stack, and I wouldn't buy it. I
every
think I
time.
passed on that movie like at least 20 times. But this other set here, I managed to find Beastmaster in that. And the funny thing about this is, it's on Amazon Instant Video, and when I started that up, it was just really grainy, like VHS quality. And I'm
Oh,
like,
go ahead.
let me go back and go back into it. Maybe it just needed a buffer and it wasn't working. So I'm like, I popped in the DVD and it looks so much better. But those were the only two movies I got around to watching this week. So
Now,
sorry.
there's something to be said about those grainy, though, the quality of VHS. It's almost, I appreciate it. I like it. I like kind of seeing it. It makes me feel like I'm watching it back in the 80s sometimes when you see that grainy quality. But, first of
Willow, and I love Willow, but I consider Willow a sword and sorcery film, not a barbarian film. Same thing with like Crawl. Crawl's a sword and sorcery, not a barbarian film.
It's like things change. It's like somebody in the chat room, which I definitely was going to address this, because they were saying, what do you think about He-Man? I'm like, no. Now, this is why. I mean, I know He-Man, you know, originally in the mini comics that they showed it, he came from a barbarian type tribe and he looks like a barbarian warrior. But the whole feeling set of Masters of the Universe feels nothing like a barbarian movie because there's too much technology in it with flying vehicles and lasers and all these other things that you don't see in a Conan, a Deathstalker, those type of movies. That's what takes me thinking He-Man is out of the element of barbarian movies. It's like you'd say more sword and sorcery, sci-fi. I never really thought of He-Man like that.
The thing about He-Man, though, it encompasses all of that. It's got barbarian, it's got swords, it's got
But
sorcery.
you don't feel like it. You know what I mean? It,
Not straight up, you know, classic old school barbarian, no. But it's
Right.
got, that's what makes He-Man so special. It's got all of it in it, but specifically, no, it is not Clash of the Titans. That's Greek mythology along with Jason the Argonauts. I'd even almost throw in the Sinbad films as well. Those are not barbarian as well. That's you know, Arabian adventures with magic and stuff like that too. I would throw those in with I'd even lump those in with sword and sorcery as well. When you've got evil wizards and like the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad and Jason the Argonauts and stuff like that, I kind of lump all those together, and you've got this mini subgenre of barbarian films where you really feel like we said, minimal clothing, beautiful women bearing it all, evil queens and kings and wizards and stuff like that. You've got a variety of monsters where they're humanoids and stuff. And the heroes have all been scarred for life by something that happened to them as a young man or woman.
Yeah, and a good story, a good adventure story with action and stuff that really keeps you, you know, engrossed, like you said. Now, here's the thing. You know, the Conan movies, of course, they're, to me, the ones I don't know them bit by bit, word by word, you know, word for word, but I know them more than the others. Like, I remember seeing, you know, the Barbarians with, you know, the Barbarian Brothers. I remember seeing that once when I was a kid, and it's only because I was like, I remember those two big dudes, they were in DC Cab, you know, and it was just, you know, hey, they were popping up and stuff, but it was a forgettable movie. Now, Deathstalker, I'm just going to be honest. When I was a kid, the only reason I wanted to rent that movie over and over was to see the boobs. That's it. I was like, oh my God, they're naked. Yes, you're a kid, but the story-wise, I mean, it was just, to me, it was not that memorable. I remember the nudity, the story, because half the time it looked like he was trying to rape half the women. So yeah. I was, you know, so I was like, but Conan, when you go to that, I mean, it's a good story, you know, from Conan the Barbarian and Conan the Destroyer. And just both have a good cast of memorable other characters besides Conan. You know, it's hard to get that mix in a movie to where you care about people other than just the main character, you know, just main Conan the Barbarian. But the other things that are happening are things that still suck you in. So the Conan movies were, to me, the most memorable. And as for Red Sonja, I'm going to be honest. I seen that once when I was a kid, and I don't even really remember the story. I don't know how great it was. I mean, I know Tyler, you know, being the Super Arnold fan, I figured he would maybe know it more. But Red Sonja, it just doesn't sink into my head as much.
Yeah, Tyler's going to give us a history lesson. He's going to go through the entire movie with us, because yeah. I mean, I've only seen it once.
Once, I seen it. Yeah.
So, go ahead, Tyler.
I don't know how to address this topic, and here he is saying, I've only seen, you know, like Conan and Conan's for like once or twice in my life. I've only seen Red Sonja once.
No. I didn't say, not Conan. I didn't say seen those only once or twice. I did see the Conan movies more than any of them. I said I can't quote them word for word, but I'm saying I
expect you to quote them. But, you know, when you say yourself like that, it almost sounds like Joe probably hasn't seen either one of those films in like 15 years.
I remember the Conan movies, but I'm saying Red Sonja, no, it's just, that's one that, it just escaped me. I barely remember her at all. Like I said, I remember the horrible Deathstalker movies more than Red Sonja. That's saying something.
I mean, that was the boobs.
Yeah, it was the boobs.
I feel like when they were making that, they're like, all right, every 5 minutes, we got to have tits in this. Somehow, some way. Hey, because, like, there's a female character that joins up with them, and, you know, you're thinking that it's a dude, and then all of a sudden, like, she's wearing this cape, and it just, like, busts open, and there they are. Like, whoa, what's the functionality of your outfit? It doesn't make much sense to me. Like, is that just used as a distraction? It was so weird, because she just turns around, and it just, like, opens up, and there they are. But it was, like, the part that attached at the top, it kind of, like, went down like this and went around her boob. So it's, like, they're still, it's really weird. Like, really weird.
There you go. Go ahead, Tyler. Go on.
I almost feel like that's a group of movies where you really shouldn't need to question why they're hanging out. Like, even like that. I only saw one of the Deathstalker films, and oddly enough, we had to stop watching because of how many tits. My dad got put out by, you know, oh, this movie's got nothing but nudity in it, turn it off. But he had no problem with me watching Conan, because he loved Conan 1 and 2, and, you know, he was perfectly fine with those films because he was such a fan of Conan as well. But I feel like that's kind of one of those films where you just, it's part of the territory of Barbarian films, is that you expect to see women in very scantily, you know, clad women or clothed, whatever, however you say. But it's just like you just expect to see it, much like you expect to see the hero with a sword slicing and dicing and decapitating people left and right. Just kind of, it's part of the elements. When you see women, they are kind of like in Game of Thrones. They were used as sexual objects a lot, like much like in Game of Thrones and stuff like that. And yet you have a few powerful ones like Valeria and Red Sonja, and even Kiri and Beastmaster. That they rise above that. They're not sexual objects, so to speak, which makes them ass kickers, awesome ass kickers, hot ass kickers. But I mean, Conan stands at the top of the heap, and then after that, I think it really kind of, and I think most people would agree that Conan the Barbarian is the best of the best. It is the one that's been probably copied the most, even though I think Beastmaster came out, I think, a year before Conan. But Conan is still celebrated as the probably the best barbarian film, and some would even say probably best even of sword and sorcery films as well. It just it has such a memorable score and cast of heroes and villains and moments, and it's such a quotable movie even today. People still quote the hell out of that first Conan film. It's on T-shirts, it's on coffee mugs. People reference it in movies, and it's big with bodybuilders and stuff like that too. The soundtrack, but
Fantastic soundtrack. You're right. I mean, just how it starts off. I mean, it starts off right into it. I mean, where that whole entire village is, being destroyed, and you see his father getting killed by those wolves or dogs or whatever.
you're going over probably the most memorable score of that piece of music is the Anvil of the Anvil of Crom, the creation of the sword. That's the dun 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 dun
Oh,
dun.
sure. No, definitely. But yeah,
I'm
just
sorry,
you
I got
pictured that.
a ton of technicalities with these films here, Joe.
Yeah, you picture, I mean, that poor kid when he sees his mother decapitated in front of him. I mean, because, with Thulsa Doom using, I assumed he was using his, entrancing eyes to, mesmerize her and then chops her head off for him to witness that, and then he gets put into slavery. And I always remember that wheel, him pushing just over and over as, yeah.
That he
And,
gets older.
yeah, then he gets, of course, just gigantic. He fights, to. In those different battles and stuff, and eventually earns his freedom. But yeah, I think another thing, like, I think I remembered, not that I think I remember, I always liked when he was running from them wolves and goes into that cave and then sees that, that soldier that was there, or the dead warrior or whatever, and gets that sword. It,
I'm
what
going
was
to be
that?
correcting the hell out of Joe here. I'm going to be so obnoxious because Joe's going to be saying all this stuff.
Oh,
No,
what
but
did
you
I?
now, Joe. Joe.
No, what did you correct me on? Because I had that little delay again. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh no, it was a buried king in that tomb underneath all those rocks and things like that.
Oh, Barry King. Okay, and he got his the sword. Did he have to shatter off the rust off of that? I couldn't remember. Am I thinking of?
Oh, covered in kind of fossilized almost, where he slant, and then it just breaks off, and the sword is nice and clean underneath it from all the dust and debris. Which makes it so cool is like, you watch that first Conan thing, and you're like, God, this was, you have no idea at least what kind of time period this took place. But you see this dead king, how long has he been here? It just shows you just how vast and deep, just like He-Man. The mythology of this universe and Conan just seems like it goes back so far, because you think of Thulsa Doom as being the last of his dying race, like the last member of this snake men group that men that become snakes. Like, he's the last of his kind. What happened to the rest of them? How long has he been around? And it just leaves such an epic scale in the two Conan films.
Yeah, and for the whole entire thing of him wanting, he wants his revenge. He wants to get revenge on, Thulsa Doom. And and then of course he has his, the woman that he falls in love with, Valeria. I don't know if I said her name right. I think it was Valeria. I think that's how you say it. But I always hated that part. Every time I'd watch it, when it'd come on TV, and when he takes that snake and then straightens it out and it becomes strong like an arrow and he kills. I hated that part. I hated that part when she got killed. I was like, oh God, please bring her back, which of course led into, the second one with a whole little gimmick of trying to have Conan do something for one particular person and bring back Valeria. But I hated seeing her die, and then when he had to put her into the fire and stuff. Those are things as a kid, you are memorable and you can remember just being sad. That's what I mean. It was an emotional movie. It's a barbarian movie, but it's emotional. It just sucked you in with such a good story.
And that's what makes his big comeback in the film. I mean, which it's a gradual comeback. He does this and he does this. It's like a, it's almost like Thulsa Doom attacks first, Conan gets him back. Thulsa attacks him again, Conan comes back. Thulsa comes back, and then it comes back with the final. It's like a great boxing match with Conan and Thulsa Doom and his group. Where he's sees his family killed in front of him as a child. He grows up, and then him and Subutai Malarik break into the snake tower and kill the giant snake and steal the eye of the serpent. Thulsa Doom gets revenge and tortures Conan and crucifies him. They go in and break up the orgy that's going on, and steal the princess back, but then Tholsa kills Valerian. Dad used to quote that scene. He used to grab me and my brother by our arm and go, you know, just hold it straight out and go, seek. Just wrestle on it. It's just like Tholsa did with that snake. And we used to quote that movie a lot, me and my dad. We still do to this day. But it makes it so much more memorable and impactful. Like, God, just like Conan can't get a break in this film, which makes him killing Fulcrum and Rexor and Tholsa Doom at the very end that much more awesome. You know, it just it just shows you they're not going the cliche route of the hero and his girl will go off into the sunset and for other reasons. No, she gets killed too. And it's a very memorable death when she, you know, she wants to breathe her last breath into his mouth. And then the funeral pyre with the music and, you know, Sumatai's crying and the fire won't burn up there, but it does for Conan. And it's just, God, Nathan, jump in here. I'm talking too damn much.
No, I think we should put like a little wig on Tyler and let him act out the movie. That'd be kind of good.
I got a sword right here, man. You know, I'm ready to go.
Too futuristic. No.
I was the question I was going to ask, and, you know, someone in the chat had already brought up, like, you know, your thoughts on He-Man, which, by the way, these guys have another podcast, Fans Power, 9 o'clock tonight. Plug that real quick. what my question is, what sort of came first for you guys? Was it like He-Man, and then it sort of opened this door to the Barbarian films, or did you guys see those movies first, and then He-Man came along, and like, what came first for both of you?
He-Man came first, and that's what kind of intrigued me. Because I actually wouldn't see Conan 1 and 2 until I was in fifth grade. And I used to see him in the video stores all the time. I was intrigued by the covers. And my dad even told me he tried to get me to rent him a few times. But as a child, I wanted to rent He-Man. If I wanted to rent He-Man, there was nothing they could recommend that was going to get me to change my mind. I did see Red Sonja first. That was the first of the Barbarian films that I saw. I saw it on TBS. And started renting it, and then a guy that worked with my mom made me a double tape of Red Sonja, and I had it for my own personal viewing to watch. He also made me a comedy live action movie, and then I saw Beastmaster on TBS because I'm sure Nathan can remember too. In our area, TBS played the hell out of the Beastmaster. You could almost say TBS stood for the Beastmaster station because they played it a lot, and that's how I was introduced to the Beastmaster. And then I saw Conan, the Barbarian, and the Destroyer in, I think, the summer before fifth grade. It was on the USA Network. The lady that babysat me and my brother, her husband, was reading the newspaper and told me that Conan, the Barbarian, was going to be on TV. I'm like, oh, man, I've always wanted to see that. And Dad likes those films. So I told Dad about it. We stayed up and watched it, the first one. And then I was like, I wonder if they play the second one the next night. And my Wilbur told me, hey, they're playing Conan and the Destroyer tonight. Like, my God, we're going to watch this one. So, and then it just grew from there. I asked for Conan the Destroyer and Conan the Barbarian for Christmas that year. I got them on VHS, and it just never stopped. But Red Sonja was the first.
But He-Man sort of, like, was the gateway,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing that opened up you to those movies.
Yeah, Sword and Sorcery, I just would see those awesome-looking covers, like the Red Sonja VHS cover. I've got the poster on display as well, where it's just a big, cool, muscle guy with a sword and a beautiful woman. And just, it's like, hey, He-Man's a cool, big, muscular guy with a sword, beautiful women. Yeah, it was, He-Man was the gateway to sword and sorcery movies. That was just kind of, you know, Willow, same thing. It was, you know, the hero with the magical sword and to save the damsel from the evil villain all comes back to He-Man and just kind of snowballed from there.
Yeah, for me, it was all like, almost seemed like everything was happening at once. I couldn't tell you like an exact memory. I just know that when the Masters of the Universe toys first came out, I just had to have them. I wanted them. They intrigued me. As for Conan, yes, when that came out, I seen that. But I was so absorbed into, you know, fantasy movies, barbarian movies, anything, because like it was a snowball effect. Like when Dungeons and Dragons, you know, whether it be the games you could play, the board games, the role-playing with your friends, or some of the books and the cartoon when it came out, and remember Thundar, it's just anything that was barbarian I was just into. But I couldn't tell you if Conan got me into He-Man or He-Man got me into Conan. I just know, you know, I liked them both. But of course, I got really sucked into He-Man a lot more. But anytime Conan was, if it would be on TV, yes, I liked watching it. I don't remember buying it. I couldn't tell you about, like, buying any tapes back then. I always say that, like, with Tyler. I know Tyler, you know, super into renting and then buying some tapes and stuff. But as for me, I just don't remember buying tapes. Eventually, we would rent stuff. So I know we probably rented Conan at times. And my memory's fuzzy. Like, did I rent it when it was on beta? I rent it when VHS first came out, because it took a while till we got VHS. I remember renting it, but I was like, God, I just don't know if it was VHS or beta. But so some of my memories are a little fuzzy, but I know I did rent stuff on beta, because I think I remembered Beverly Hills Cop being on beta and renting that. So I'm sure Conan, I had to rent it on beta.
That's kind of crazy that you had beta for a while and then got into VHS.
Yeah,
well, for me, I just it was just always VHS. Like, there was never, like, my parents, we never had a beta player.
Well, it took a while. I know until we got VHS, we were probably one of the last people in the neighborhood, definitely the family, that got VHS. I told you the stories of when I'd go to a Video Connection, and it used to thrive with beta on the floor that you right when you came into the doors. And then when VHS came, suddenly beta started shrinking. Then we went in one time, we're like, where's beta? They said, gotta go upstairs. Upstairs? But I never knew what the hell upstairs was. So walked with my dad. There's this section that was probably smaller than the room I'm in right now, with maybe 200 or less VHS tapes that we'd rent on a repeating cycle. But I couldn't go a little further down, because if you went too far, that was the porn section. So we were stuck in this little bitty beta section. So, yeah, I know I rented it. But, yeah, as for which came first, I couldn't tell you. I just know I experienced it, seemed like, all at the same time, and enjoyed, like I said, enjoyed them both. But Masters, of course, more. Because there was more to obvious offer at that time. You had a cartoon, you had toys, more stuff. I mean, I'm sure if Conan would have had, like, a cartoon that kept going and going and going, and tons of Conan toys, lots of them, as much as Masters, heck, that would have been, you know, a bonanza. But I know we didn't.
When it came out, they had a... That was in the... Or they did have that very small one that was, I think, came out to coincide with Conan the Destroyer. It was like a real small few figures of Conan. The skull vaguely like Arnold. Then they have the Conan the Adventurer cartoon from the 90s that had action figures and a cartoon and everything. But was just kind of forgettable.
That's what I mean. It just wasn't as much as Masters. If it was, oh God, I'm sure I would have been just as nuts watching a Conan cartoon every single day and buying tons of Conan toys.
Well, it's a property that still can do well. It's just unfortunate that Universal didn't do a good job with their, you know, hey, let's do another Conan film, you know, and it just looked too clean. It looked like they weren't talking of a time. It looked like the dialogue was too current day, like what they have a. They have that problem in so many period films where they talk as if like they live down the road from you.
And that's a question I was going to do, actually, to both of you before we obviously talk about Conan the Destroyer next, which that was my favorite of the two. I know I'm on the outs on that, but I like Conan the Destroyer more than Barbarian.
I don't think people appreciate it enough. I get it has problems, yes, but it's by no means a shitty sequel or anything like
that.
I loved it
more than the first one.
I would agree with Joe. I kind of prefer Destroyer over the first one.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, this is great. Now I like this. I would not have pictured I mean, because Conan the Barbarian is the best for me, but I love Conan the Destroyer. So I got to hear your all's points on that very thing. Why?
Well, we might as well go into it right now. I'll save that other question I was going to do for later, but I was into the other sub characters again a little more, and it seemed like lots of shit going on. I know it sounds crazy, but I love Grace Jones. I found her so hot. Yeah, and I found her so hot in that damn movie. Her and the princess. I don't even know the princess's name. That's how sad I am. I don't even know what the
Jenna.
Okay. Well, yeah, her, I mean, she was just a cute, hot as shit. And, of course, that woman who played in Superman 2 was here, and she's, what's her name in real life? I don't know it.
Sarah Douglas.
Okay, God, I mean, her sexy outfit. I mean, it was just full of sexy women, but I always liked, you know, the thing they did in this one was, I know they added a little comedic effect, which some people felt you know, it felt off for the movie, you know, with Malik and stuff, yeah. with the little stuff he would do. But I always got a kick out of him trying to steal stuff and putting, you know, he's putting the jewels in his mouth and or whatever. I got a kick out of him. I love the wizard, Akiro. I loved him when he had that little battle back and forth with the, you know, the other wizard where they're trying to open and close, you know, the jaw of that, where the gem was that she had to get. I used to freak out as a kid, the scene when, you know, when he met the wizard and, you know, all the mirrors were surrounded and then that big ass beast, that beast scared the shit out of me as a kid. I hated that. Every time it came out, I'm not kidding, I was scared. I used to cover like my eyes and half my face. That beast frightened me. And then when he, you know, lunged back, you know, to with his sword and then, you know, hit the glass, or how, I forgot how the first blow happened. I know Tyler would, but how did the first glass get shattered?
Accident where he's leaning back to strike and he ends up hitting the mirror by accident. And he okay.
sees it. Awesome, yeah. Yeah, I figured. And so, yeah, and then had to shatter, you know, shatter more, and it's slashing the beast. And then he had the decision of the last two mirrors, you know, and then he looked like he was going to throw it at them, and they're like, no, and then he threw it the other way that killed. You see that the wizard and that beast were the same. I love that part. I love the part with the horn when the creature came alive and he had to rip that damn horn out of his head and he was on him. It looks so real. That's what's so cool about that compared to special effects nowadays. That, I mean, it's a real thing he's on, and it felt like he was battling this actual gigantic monster and ripping that horn out with all the tendons and shit and blood. It's just, man, I was so into that movie. And of course, again, Malik with his little thing, like, dun, 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 when he stabbed with this little dagger on top of the beast, and then he's looking all proud. You know, a part that could take you to make you laugh for a second after being scared to hell. But I was just into everything about that. Everything about that damn movie. Bambata, you know, like, you know, having to do the double-crossing. Because remember, not double-crossing, he was instructed, yes, you're going to kill him after they get the gem. You're going to probably kill Conan. But, oh, man, just a lot of shit was going on in that movie. I just love Conan the Destroyer.
Yeah, I would agree with Joe on everything. Like, obviously, when you look at both of the movies together, you know, the first one, the quality of the film itself, I would agree is better than the second one. But when you take all the side characters and then some of the comedic stuff, which works for me, I know some people would probably scoff at it or be like, it's too cheesy. But I think that Destroyer is sort of that perfect blend of everything that I would want in a movie like that. But Joe pretty much said everything I wanted to say, basically. Like, the side characters in that make that movie for me.
Yeah, I always like the idea of Conan having a group of buddies that he travels around with, and that's what Destroyer does very well. Like, Barbarian, you get Subutai, you get Valer, but it was awesome to see this caravan of characters. And as a kid, I always wanted Bambata and Conan to team up. I didn't want them to fight. I just wanted to think that he was actually going to, you know, withhold from trying to kill Conan. Of course, at the end, when they duke it out and they have that awesome fit sequence while the ceremony is going on, I was like, oh, man, they got to fight. I hate this. But now I think it's great. I think it's awesome to constantly have Bambata, like, always just hovering over Conan, waiting for that opportunity to kill him and stuff like that. And Grace Jones steals the show as from, like, side characters. I thought she was so cool as a kid. I thought she was just such a
loved her. A
wild character and just a real ass kicker. And of course, I loved Akiro. Malik, I had this kind of back and forth. You know, as a kid, I was like, oh, okay, he's fine. Then I got a little older. I'm like, his humor just kind of takes away some of the moments, or it kind of kills momentum. And then I'm just kind of indifferent to him. Like, my dad doesn't like him at all. I don't think he ever did. I think he could have worked better but some of his jokes just kind of felt like, you know, you could have cut that joke there. You could have cut that remark there. And I used to wonder as a kid, why is he always swallowing it? My dad's like, he's going to pick him out of his poop. That's why he's going to do. That's why he's swallowing. I'm like, really? I had no idea. Why does he keep swallowing all these diamonds and gems all the time?
Yeah, it is hard. It's hard to make side characters enjoyable and memorable in a movie, and it just worked. I mean, when you look at the character of Zula, you know, Grace Jones, as tough and savage as, you know, she is, the part with, like, the rats, when she's screaming and she's hitting at them, and they're all looking at her like, what the hell? Like, you know, and she kind of shrugs her shoulder and makes a little face like, you know, like, you wouldn't expect that warrior to be afraid of them rats that are all around there. But it, like I said, it worked. It was that kind of humor that didn't really take you out of it. It was just, I get it. I get what they're doing.
Because that was really the only, other than playing off her character in a situation, like when when Malik is trying to put cream on her wound.
Oh yeah,
that, you know, that works well because
I like that.
Funny, she's playing off the situation, and that's why the rat joke works well even today. Where I'm like, you know, it's, and plus she does a good job of selling it, like the fear, and then she looks and kind of doesn't know what to say other than I don't know, I'm sorry, you know, and they all just shake their head at her, and she kind of looks back like, all right, I got to get my groove back here. Of being an ass kicker, but it's just, they all play well off of each other. And dude, you're still seeing Conan hacking away at people. I mean, there's no shortage of blood being spilt in like the Keepers of the Horn, when they're all like Bombada's taking a spiked mace and smashing people left. Conan slicing people's stomachs open. The cannibals that are getting ready to Kiro, Conan cuts their heads off. And I mean, even though this is supposed to have a slightly or family or friendlier tone, the violence is still there. Like when they're pulling out the Horn of Dagoth. I'm just curious, Joe, do you know who was in that suit? I almost feel like you didn't know who was in the suit.
No, who?
Andre the Giant.
Oh, no shit. Andre was in that? Oh, shit.
Okay. Yeah, there's that famous picture where like Arnold in his garb and he's standing beside Andre, right? There's a picture.
They're holding Arnold up between the two of them. Shows you how small Arnold is compared to Wilt and Andre.
Wow. Yeah. I'm going to have to check that out.
An easy picture to find, but yeah, Andre in the suit. Yeah.
No way. I guess it makes sense. I mean, you know, that was a big giant creature. That's pretty freaking cool. I'd like to look at it. Thanks for letting me know. I had no clue about that.
I kind of got the feeling you did, the way you were describing it. Like, it's like he's really interacting. He's like, you know, he really was interacting with somebody.
I knew he was, but I just meant, that's what I mean compared to like what I love about stuff that was done in the 80s, 90s compared to a lot of special effects. I'm not saying special effects don't work. They work more for half the time. For
more fun to see them actually. And the actors will say it themselves. It doesn't matter what it is. The actors say they have you get a better performance out of them if they have something to interact with, as opposed to a tennis ball on a string that, okay, that's the big man-eating dinosaur unicorn thing. Be afraid of it. Actually, you're going to fight it. Fight that tennis ball, you know?
Yeah, that's, I mean, I like when they're actually interacting. I mean, it's like, you think of, you know, the Friday the 13th movies, you know, when Tom Savini is making this amazing special effects and blood and just, you know, grotesque-looking things. And then you get something like, let's say, Jason X, and he's slashing through stuff. It's special effects. It's funny. It's like, I'm not into this. I don't feel like this is happening. Just like Pumpkinhead, the Pumpkinhead movies, an actual, like, you know, big animatronic and part-time people doing stuff. It's real-looking creature. And then here comes the Pumpkinheads that came out years later. They had, like, two of them back-to-back. And they're showing Pumpkinhead. He's jumping off the house, and it's all digital and phony. I'm like, man, this just doesn't look real. So that was what you can appreciate from these movies. But no, I mean,
guys, because we didn't touch on this, but this is one of the most epic scenes in the first one, the big snake scene. I mean, what do you, you know, we're talking about practical effects. What do you guys think about the big massive snake that Conan kills and decapitates?
Well, again, go ahead. Go ahead, Nathan.
I'm pretty much going to say the same thing, I imagine. Like, practical effects, I wish there were more practical effects in movies today. Like, you watch some of these superhero films, you know, and it's great that it's like, oh, we can have this big elaborate scene and we're capable of doing it. But when you watch it, it just, sometimes it looks great, and other times it just almost takes you out of what's going on, because you're just like, yeah, all right, that looks fake as shit. And you think back to things like Batman. You know, like, yeah, there were some special effect, like some CG in there a little bit, but, you know, like the matte paintings and things like that, it just, they need to bring more of that stuff back.
Yeah, old man shots, like, you know, because 89 used a lot of those and matte paintings to expand the size of Gotham and stuff like that. And that's what a lot of these films do. They, like, you know, I mean, they actually built the set of Thulsa Doom's temple like it's built on a mountain. That was actually there for them to interact with. The snake is there for Arnold to interact with and fight.
Good for, I'm glad you said that, Tyler. That's something that I forgot about. A lot of, again, there's some of these movies that don't even have the real environments. It's all like blue screen, green screen, or whatever, and they create these fake environments to where they're interacting, where, yes, in those movies back then, they're actually in these places that are, you know, a desert, you know, crazy looking jungle. I'm not saying they're not doing that in movies nowadays. They still do. But some focus so much on the special effects. It's like, again, you don't even feel like they're there. It's like, I want to feel like they're in this. Like, it makes you feel like you're in, you know, you're in the movie. You feel like you're part of the movie and the experience. And some things take you out of that moment. And yeah, that is what I like. Yeah, I'm glad you said it. I forgot the environments themselves. You know, that's something that sometimes isn't even real in movies.
No, I blame studios because I know they're trying to save money, so they figure it's cheaper to have some guy do it on a computer as opposed to going out, you know, moving the entire crew to Spain and shooting on this mountain, you know, ravine or something like that, and building some sets and stuff like that. It's like, no, we'll do it in studio, in-house, we'll do it on a computer, do some green screen shots, and we'll call it a day.
Could you imagine Rambo? Could you imagine a Rambo movie with a green screen, blue screen? How sick that would be for not to be in a real place. It's just this crap.
I mean, look, you'd think it's 2018, not to date this episode, but they're you know, like Nathan said, when you watch these superheroes, you clearly know if they're not doing a good job of hiding these backgrounds. You know, there are a few times in superhero movies where, okay, it looks pretty seamless. But for the most part, when you're watching, I'm like, God, man, did you guys even try to make this look like they're on location in New York or in, you know, in other parts of the world? No, you didn't. You know, where did the money go? And you just kind of, okay, well, it's made for kids and teenagers and people who just like to wear superhero shirts that they bought at Walmart and Target for real cheap because it's really cool. It's like superheroes nowadays all of a sudden, you know, it's like people who know movies and like superheroes because of superheroes, they're not our bread and butter. We can get away
you're right. Sometimes, and for some movies, it works. I mean, they can make something look absolutely real, and if they got a super big budget, hey, great, I'm glad. But some, it's just, okay, this is an example. There was one part in the first Spider-Man movie of Tobey Maguire that drove me nuts. When he's jumping on those rooftops and they're showing from the overhead, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, Nathan.
It looked like something out of like a PS2 game.
It looks so fake. I'm like, what was even the point? I was like, if you're going to be putting some big money and doing some special effects, make this look good. But it's like, that looked horrible. You know, and it's just, I always think, okay, if they had some big budget, they're doing this. I always dread for, again, when they say some things they wish they would have seen in the past for a certain property in a movie. I'm like, it couldn't have happened. Because they didn't picture this. If our budget nowadays with special effects couldn't look good for certain movies, do you think a movie back then in the 80s where, okay, I'm going to say He-Man. Do you think He-Man was going to be riding Battle Cat through that damn movie? It wasn't going to happen. It would have looked like a hot mess in 1987. You could have had one still scene with a big animatronic of a Battle Cat attacking. But as for him riding, what would have been stuck with? The claymation, stop motion stuff of, you know, looking all phony, but like Clash of the Titans. That's what we would have got, is something like that.
Arnie, you take that back.
What did you say?
Do not say anything was phony about Clash of the Titans, man. I'll box your ears.
Okay, I love the movie, but it's true. But no, that's not me. No, it is. It's true.
Here we go.
I love the movie, but yes, the stop motion stuff. Yeah, there's some bad looking stuff.
Wait. All right, hang on, Joe. Because, I mean, stop motion is, I guess, going to be kind of touchy because I love stop motion. Claymation stuff.
I like it, but what I mean is, you can tell.
Devaney, who, by the way, who was a real dick in real life, me and Nathan both. So.
Again, I like Clash of the Titans. I like that. But what I mean is, picture if they did do a Masters of the Universe movie and we would have seen a stop motion somehow Dolph Lundgren on a claymation looking Battle Cat and they try to make it look like he's doing something. Picture how that would have been joked a little bit then, but a lot now. Man, that looks so phony. They should have never did it. So again, people, that's why you never got Battle Cat. They couldn't do it. There was no way Battle Cat was going to make any appearance in that movie that could have pleased anybody, from stop motion to just big animatronics. It couldn't have worked for what you wanted. Maybe nowadays, but I don't know.
I know you guys are probably going to touch on this when you do Fans of Power tonight at 9 o'clock.
Well, we're going to lose it tonight. There's a couple things. It's going to happen. Get ready.
And you don't really, if you guys don't want to touch on it on here, you don't have to. But I did see that article that David Goyer dropped out of the movie. So
I'm going to hold my breath. I'm going to bite my tongue until tonight. But Tyler, if he wants to, he can go right ahead. I'll just read a book while he talks.
Just like what I always expected. And I think, and I'll touch on this again tonight for the audience who listens to that, you know, I think by now, if you people who are still, you know, living under a rock on social media, when they keep making these announcements, like, oh, wow, here's doing another movie, yeah. You know, it's like, okay, look, by this point, I think all of you, newcomers or people who are just less than casual fans to casual fans to hardcore fans who are thinking, new movie news, it ain't happening, people. It's not going to happen while Sony's in charge.
So. Well, it said in the article that, like, it's still slated to come out, like, next summer or something. And, like, they don't even have a script, right? Like, there's nothing.
Nothing's approved. They haven't said anything's approved. They just said that they lost the director, which, you know what, that's been the common denominator, that and they can't get a good script. So, you know what? Obviously, it wasn't important enough for David Gore to stick around, and it was important enough for Sony to keep him on the picture. So it just shows you this movie is not on the priority list of anybody working at Sony.
Yeah, it's kind of bad that Sony has that property. Like, because I did you watch the teaser trailer for Venom?
Shows, they're just like, we got it. So let's to Tom Hardy, man. Yeah, people love Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy.
Why is it taking place in San Francisco?
Like, hell if I know.
Anyway, I guess, too, to kind of get back on the subject, because I think Joe's still reading his book. What do you think about the news that they're going to do a Conan TV show? For, like,
Amazon? There?
Yeah, Amazon's going to do it.
I can have faith in that.
I'd say there's a better chance of getting a good Conan series when it's not being interfered by with you know, producers and studio execs. Like, we gotta make sure we get Angelina Jolie in here to play the evil sorcerer, because people like her. And since she didn't get to play Bride of Frankenstein and that failed Monster Universe, we gotta have Angelina. Her big voluptuous lips to play Angelina of some kind. We'll rewrite the script around her, make her Conan's evil stepmother or something like that, but we got to go in the movie. No. There'll be no interference. I think it's not to say to be good, but I still say there's a better chance of getting a good Conan series off the ground when you don't have all the, like, Netflix is another thing. You know, you feel like there's less interference to worry about when you're not going the big, you know, movie studio route. Not to say it's always the case, but with the property like Conan, you can't have people changing the content because you want this in it. We can't have boobs in it. We got to get the 12-year-olds in. We got to sell some toys. We got to give Conan, like, a little fluffy Teddy Rupskin kind of like character.
Which doesn't make any sense, because they sold toys off of these movies in the 80s that are rated R. So I don't understand that logic anymore.
It's just, I think it's just changed. Plus, not to mention, movie toys don't sell anymore anyway. You look at every superhero movie, all the superhero toys for Spider-Man, Superman, Batman, Justice League, whatever the case, they're all on the shelves. No one buys them. Not even
kids. Well, yeah, I think the only reason that those figures sell is the adult collectors, really, because kids aren't buying that shit.
No, they're buying more of the role-play stuff. So if Conan was marketed towards kids, they would be more apt to buy the sword and shield and maybe, I don't know. Just the more dress-up stuff is what I see more kids playing with, like the Captain America shield and helmet and stuff like that. But I think an Amazon series for Conan, it would be a breath of fresh air, and hopefully they get people who are passionate about the stories by Robert E. Howard, who look at the Frazetta paintings, the paintings of Joe Jusco and Earl Norm, who did for the comic books and stuff like that. Look at that, and, like, there's a story to be told in that one image of Conan fighting a giant shark and saving this beautiful woman. Or from the cover of Conan the Usurper, when you've got Conan chained to the ground with by his wrists, and a giant snake is underneath his legs and looking down upon him, getting ready to attack him. There's a story to be told in just that painting alone. And hopefully with Amazon, they can get a series that pays homage to the fantasy elements of the Destroyer and the kind of forgotten earth of Conan the Barbarian, and then maintain the violence and the sexuality and what you expect to see in a Conan book, comic book, or movie. So
I think it's the right way to go, because they were trying to get that third movie. I know Arnold was like, yeah, we're doing it. It's going to happen. And then it's kind of like that He-Man movie. Like, it just, you hear about it like a couple times a year, and then nothing comes of it. So, and I think with Amazon too, like, it gives you that leeway. It's like, we can do this how we want to do it, and there won't be as much interference, like you said.
I like to think of Arnold as they would reach out to Arnold and have Arnold play old King Conan in this Amazon series. You know, I think it'd be foolish to not get Arnold involved in some way and have Arnold as an old king doing this. You know, doing episodes of Arnold flashing back and thinking about this time period, or that you do an episode of old Conan and Arnold's playing him, you know, or and do a whole lot of young Conan, because that's what people want to see, not always the older Conan, but I think Arnold playing an older grizzled King Conan in the Amazon series would be money in the bank. That's what fans would want to see. Arnold would want to do that. Get John Milius involved, who directed the first Conan in some form or fashion, you know, and the guys who worked on the Conan comic books, I forgot what their names are, who worked on the script for Destroyer, and they also helped with Barbarian as well. But there's so many great things that could be done on an Amazon series, and you don't have people interfering. If you want to show naked women, you can do that. If you want to have Conan hacking away at a giant snake, you know, by grabbing its tongue and slashing it off and then, you know, impaling it in the eye, he can do that and not have to worry about, you know, censorship and stuff like that. So hopefully we'll all luck out with the Conan series.
Or it'll just be a disaster.
Yeah.
I'd hope it'd be good. I mean, you're right with things that are going successful on Netflix. And like you said, Amazon, I mean, I could see that being a fantastic thing that they could do for either of those avenues. But what would be even greater is, I love movies, but could you imagine if it did have a really good feel, tone to it? And, you know, you're getting more than just a movie. You're getting possibly, let's say, 20 episodes in a season at maybe 45 minutes to an hour per episode.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of content. I mean, and you could hopefully it could span out with a lot of different things that could happen throughout a series. So I would love, I mean, I'd be all for it, which brings me to the question I was going to ask, you know, both of you. I'll hit Nathan first because I know Tyler's going to hit on this crazy too. But do you think Barbarian type movies, games, things in general that feel, do you think that's something that people are not really connecting to nowadays? Do you think it's something that just can't succeed? Can succeed if written properly? I mean, do you think people are too much into technology with kids nowadays where they don't understand? I mean, Nathan, what do you think? Do you think Barbarian movies and that type of, that whole genre, from movies to games or whatever, do you think that could make a comeback to where people could get really into it or what? I don't know, because I don't see people flipping over Barbarian stuff anymore.
I think that it certainly has the possibility. There's a variety of elements. I mean, you know, Game of Thrones takes elements from it. Granted, it's more, you know, sorcery, sword and sorcery, as you know, not. But I think the main factor when you go back, the common themes that we were talking about, and Tyler kind of said some orgies, these movies, there's always like some big gathering of people, mostly naked, doing whatever. But and I think I kind of look back to Deathstalker as well. Like, it's a lot of women being like sexual objects and, you know, being raped and all this stuff. And I think nowadays, with the way everyone is and their sensitivities, and some of it's fine, but I think some of it's just over the top. People just looking and nitpicking to find something to be angry about, and oh, we got to protest this and everything. But I think that plays a role into it. People being offended by, well, you shouldn't have done that. Like, this character needs to be stronger and all this stuff. I think there is an audience for it, though, because you look at how popular Game of Thrones is, you know, with video games. You think about, there's like a barbarian warrior character in like Diablo, and you know, there's been MMOs.
Well, that's what I want to ask you real quick, Nathan, before Tyler gets into his thoughts. But you're bringing up games now, like in the 90s, you know, late 80s into the 90s, I remember lots of barbarian type games. I mean, you had Golden Axe. I remember Sword of Sodan. I remember that thing. I mean, my God, your object was to not only kill some of these people, but you could chop and take their heads off. There was that other thing where I showed the Ultimate Barbarian or something that I found out about on a computer I knew nothing about, and that even had some fighting with chopping off heads. But are there even barbarian games nowadays? Because I haven't played modern games in a long time, so I don't know.
That was a nasty cough.
Yeah, that's okay.
God of War would kind of, it kind of teeters on that line.
Of like mythology and barbarians?
Yeah, but it's kind of got that
barbarian feel to it. And it's got the same elements, you know, like the topless women and all that shit.
Well, there's in the chat room, Christopher Dahlberg is bringing up three games. Again, I've never played either of these three. I mean, I never played these three, but he said Skyrim, Elder Scrolls, and Guild Wars. I've never played them. Have you played those? And
it kind of squeezes in there. Like, it's sort of a fine line with when we're talking, you know, barbarian stuff and then, like, sword and sorcery. Like, there's elements of that in the barbarian films and it bleeds in. I guess I would... It's kind of in there. I don't know.
Because, I mean, that's the thing. When I think of, like, Golden Axe, when I played that back in the day, beyond the, yes, magic potions he could use, that felt all barbarian. I mean, it looked not only him, but, you know, the dwarf, the female warrior, they look like they're in barbarian type, that type of outfits. And all the slashing and hacking and creatures that you could be on. There wasn't, like, you know, sci-fi vehicles of any, you know, thing like that. It just... It was all barbarian feel, so I didn't know if there was stuff like that. But I mean, if, like, you know, Christopher Dahlberg mentioned those three and you said you'd remember, I mean, I guess if those had that feel, cool. But yeah, I just didn't know. I just didn't know if people are into it and you could bring, because like you said, there's an audience for Game of Thrones. And I know that teeters on, it seems like people in their 20s and older. I just don't know how much the younger generation is into that. And that's, I mean, I didn't know if a younger generation would be into bringing back or be into fantasy. I mean, barbarian movies. So I guess, well, I'll pass it to Tyler. Or, I mean, go ahead, Nathan, and then Tyler. I'm sorry.
I think it's kind of like how they're doing the Amazon TV show. I think nowadays things like this work better if you put it out there and, like, because I see it differently. Like, I don't think it could work as much theatrically. Like, you look at the remake, you look at that Hercules movie with The Rock. Ugh. You know, like, it theatrically, I don't think these movies would work as well. I think they need to find their niche and be on thing, have access to it like you do with Game of Thrones or Stranger Things or stuff like that.
Okay, I understand. I see what you mean. Okay, all right. Well, Tyler, go ahead.
Yeah, it can succeed, but I also blame studios for not taking the source material very seriously. You know, they make movies like two bad Hercules movies in the same summer. They released movies like Gods of Egypt and Warcraft, and they look like crap. You know, the special effects look bad. They make sure they throw in a lot of bad jokes and remarks with the heroes and stuff like that. Everything looks like bad CGI with computer backgrounds. Nothing looks authentic. It looks like they're pandering to a very, very generic, don't go to the movies much audience, as opposed to, you know, playing off this could be a big summer spectacle. And, you know, Lord of the Rings, it was a giant smash, but it was also a big gamble. They didn't expect people to, you know, make it the global phenomenon that it was, but they took the source materials seriously. They didn't play it for jokes. They didn't alter stuff. They kept in line with what people expected who were fans of the book, but also cut out some stuff so that way the general audience could appreciate, because I was a general audience, but I thought it looked great. I thought they were taking it seriously. Do I go back and rewatch the series? No. But at the time, I felt like, you know, they were, New Line was like, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right. We're not going to make this a mess and throw in a lot of, you know, silly one-liners and change this and change that from the source material.
That's a good example. No, you brought up a great example with Lord of the Rings, because, you know, not barbarian, but fantasy, but it was fantastic to where my sister, who hates anything that would have to do with fantasy and all that type of stuff, or magic, or dwarves and elves, whatever, she was never into that. She's watching. They were bringing in different target audiences. They were bringing in so many different types of people to watch this movie that everybody said, damn, it's just a good movie. And that's what I mean. If somebody was to bring back barbarian-type movies, like you said, as long as they have the source material right but can make it something epic, you can bring in just a new generation of fans. I mean, I never seen so many people into that Lord of the Rings because they're so damn long, 3 to 4 hours for each movie, but it wasn't like, I never heard, at least from me, I'm not saying people didn't say this, but from the people I knew that watched it, including my sister, she wasn't bored. Do you know how hard it is to make a 3 to 4 hour movie and not have somebody say, man, it was kind of really boring at parts. It kind of really just, you were into it. You were into the damn story that was happening. It was great. I mean, of course, it was written years ago. They just wrote a fantastic story, but it just showed it can suck you in. And I'll admit, if the damn Lord of the Rings pops up on TBS, TNT, and I have them on DVD already, but if it pops up on TV, I put it on. It's like, I can't help it. I can get sucked back into that. And you're right. I hope that whoever does try to do some type of barbaric movies can just do what they did, like how they did with Lord of the Rings. As long as they can get source material right and just really keep you engrossed and not have a lot of, like you said, nonsense vernacular or ways they talk to where it relates to where it's modern stuff. Like, no, leave any of the ways we speak in these barbarian movies out of it, because then it takes you out of the moment. You know, it takes you out of this other reality you're in.
And you know, another thing to go ahead, Nathan.
Oh no, I would go.
No, just something that a lot of movies today lack. They don't have good villains in movies anymore. And James Earl Jones said one time that, you know, if you take a villain and you have fun with it, well, then you take a lot of the threat from that villain. A good villain has to really follow through with what he's doing and not think of it as, now I got to throw in a one-liner. Now I got to throw in a yuck. Now I got to be kind of silly and smarky with my evil ways here. You know, you can't have a good villain that's, you know, oh, he was his wife was killed when he was 20, and now we could bring him back, guys. And you're like, no, you can't have that. You got to have a barbarian villain that is the epitome of evil, the devil himself. You know, the like Dulce Doom. That's why we're talking about this. The Dulce Doom is the Mayaxe from the Beastmaster, because we haven't touched on Beastmaster much. These are all Gedrin and Red Sonja, an evil lesbian queen who wants Red Sonja to have sex with her. I mean, we're not saying lesbian action is evil, but I'm saying that's all. That she is just an evil queen, and she wants Red Sonja for herself. Like that. That's why she's like, don't kill her. I want her unharmed and brought to me, because she has a sexual attraction to her. She's evil because she desires, you know, a woman she can't have, and not to mention killing people left and right. Like at the beginning of Red Sonja, when they go in and sack that temple of women protecting the talisman, the ones that survive, they throw them down in a pit and bury them alive. Just because. And she does it so casually. It's like, you know, human life means all these beautiful women, and she just dismisses the four or five that are left, buries them alive. Dulce Doom is telling people to kill themselves at his command, and tells you that, you know, steel isn't strong, flesh is, because I'm flesh, and I can command people to kill themselves at my will. These people listen to what I have to say. I don't need to wield a sword. I'm stronger than that. And Queen Taramis is, you know, she's acting out this way to bring back a god, a demonic god, who she thinks she's going to rule the world with her. And Mayaxe, the evil priest and the Beastmaster, and the Jun Horde, they're just a bunch of assholes. The Jun Horde, they're just killing people for the sake of it. They don't get anything out of it other than they enjoy killing peasant farmers and their families and their dogs and stuff like that. That makes them just the biggest pricks on the planet. And then Mayaxe enjoys telling people that, he wants your children. So I'm going to take your children and burn them alive in front of you because, I'm telling you that our God needs to have child sacrifice. These are just completely just unforgiving and unforgettable villains, because they truly believe in these just very evil anti-human acts.
Yeah. And that's part of the problem now. That's why I don't think these would work as movies. That's why I think they need to be on Amazon and Netflix. All those things you just said, like, we're so PC now, and everyone is so easily offended by everything. And all right, you know, sometimes it's justifiable, but other times, and I know this happened in the 80s and 90s when things would come out, you know, like Beavis and Butthead, parents got upset and everything about it, and all these things. Like, I know it keeps going in a cycle, but it seems to me like it's just gotten so much worse. It's like, oh, well, then it's like, well, you don't have to go see it. Yeah, but my kids, it's like, well, don't show it to them. Don't make sure that they don't have access to it. I don't know. Like, it just, ugh. That's a whole other side rant.
Parents are. I'm sorry. If you didn't want your child seeing it, then you know what? if you, you know, then you blame the parents who let their child see that. You know, if Nathan comes over to my house to watch something he wouldn't have been able to watch at his house, it's my parents' fault for that. It's not his parents' fault.
No, but Tyler, it's the movie's fault.
Oh, yeah.
We got to blame it on the movies and the video games. So much easier to blame the people. Not the parents. You can't blame the parents for this sort of shit.
No, it's not their fault. If anything, it's someone think of the children, you know, Miss Lovejoy. You know, plus, looking back, we do this podcast because movies that Joe, Nathan, and myself, and people who listen to this and people who haven't listened to this, they made who we are today. We watch these films like, that's cool. These are heroes. Whether they were carrying a giant machine gun, a giant sword, or they were trying to stop a crazy murderer that haunted you in your dreams or in some kind of camp or whatever. Those are the heroes and villains you grew up with. There was no stopping these villains because they believed in what they did. You know, and the heroes, that was what we saw, was like, that's what a man is. You know, working with your buddies in the jungle to stop an alien hunter, or in outer space trying to stop this giant hive of aliens from running, you know, turning all your Marines into more aliens, or going into Vietnam and trying to rescue POWs. That was what a man was to us as kids. People say, oh, Reagan's because of Reagan and this, and like, no, I just, you know what? That's what I thought looked cool. And the villains were memorable, you know. That's why we're still talking about these barbarian movies today. You know, people still like to, you know, reference Beastmaster on these things because these were memorable heroes and villains that they didn't have all these layers. Not to say that it's not all right to have layers and depth to your heroes and villains. Yes, that's fine here and there, but that's become like the template of today, that villains have got like Kylo Ren. God almighty, man. We can't just have a straight up balls to the wall, black-hearted villain anymore. We got to have somebody. I'm not spoiling anything, Joe. You can
take.
I'm just saying that they everyone is afraid to have their villains be
ruthless.
Be a villain, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, Wile E. Coyote didn't apologize for trying to kill the Roadrunner all the time.
Now he would.
You make fun of me all the time, Roadrunner, and I really just don't appreciate it. That's why I buy all these traps from Ackman. They fall on my head all the time. Oh, gee, Wiley, I'm sorry. There, let me share my bird seed with you there or something like that. All right? Hey. It's like, oh, you people, stop trying to make everything so damn PC.
Yeah. And let me also say, hey, JSP in the chat room. I know you've been there. Sorry about that, man. We've been on so many nonstop rants. Didn't get a chance to, because he's been doing a lot of comments. I mean, they were, in fact, even talking about, you know, like how, if you'd want to say, sissified, you know, everything is nowadays with everybody. Think about it. Think if, like, let's say we did get, you know, some cool-ass Conan, whether it was a movie or a series. Now, they didn't mention, so I could picture it, though. Picture the swords we'd get nowadays. It'd be big rubber foam or something. We wouldn't have that good hard plastic. I mean, when you're a kid, You want to hear clinks and clanks. And if you occasionally bop yourself on the head, it happens. My God, just grow some. But yeah. I just picture, like, we get this little foam sword that we're hitting, and then it falls apart. Mom, can you buy another one? I guess it's a way of selling more swords because they all fall apart to shit.
$34.99.
Let's get another and another. So, yeah, we wouldn't have the good days of playing like we used to, unfortunately. But
if you could get plastic swords, like soft plastic, they either kind of curve to it, kind of like a scimitar or kind of an Arabian sword or a straight-up broad sword with a nice soft plastic that eventually would crack because you and your brother or siblings or buddies would be out smacking the plastic or going out hitting trees, pretending they're evil warriors and stuff like that. I mean, that was part of the fun of that, is pretending that you're a He-Man or Conan or the Beastmaster or Kalidor and Red Sonja, because you really wanted to hit on Red Sonja. Like, oh man, it's a kiss from her.
But kids don't have imaginations anymore, and they don't have long attention.
Their parents' phone to play around with, because you know what? Hey, instead of having them interact with people and things like that, here, give them the phone, and they can play Candy Crush or whatever's currently popular that will turn into another abysmal movie by some schmuck studio exec like the Emoji.
How many
movie.
Sticks? We even would take a stick and break the branches to look. Oh,
yeah. Stick that looked like a sword. I'm like, okay, break that off. Okay, now I've got my broadsword.
You know? Yes.
Well, like my mom, her mop broke when I was a kid, and she gave me the handle, and I just pretended like I was Donatello the rest of the day.
There you go. There's your own personal bow staff right at home.
Yeah, you would hear. You're right. Those broomsticks made so many good weapons. This is a quick little story. I knew nothing about until eventually we moved from, like, my childhood home. My dad was going through a lot of brooms. He was always like, Joe, you know, and to my older brother and my sister's like, do you know what happened to the broom? No, no. And as a kid, I was the youngest of the family. I said, I don't know. Like, what would I need a broom for? And years later, we finally moved. And when we were moving the washer and dryer, and back of the washer and the dryer must have been like 10, 11 of just the brush part of the brooms that were laying in back. Like, what
was that gesture you just did there, Joe?
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant to do a brush. Did it look like I was doing something else? I'm sorry.
Jim Cornette, you know.
Oh, well, okay. I'm sorry. Well, you know, just you find the brush part at the bottom. My dad's like, what is going on? What is all this? I was like, I have no clue. And we asked my brother. He came over. He was moved out by that time, but he came over when he was helping us. And he's like, Bill, what are all these broomsticks? Do you have an idea about this? He's like, well, Daddy said I can finally tell you. He's like, I was taking them. He was like, I was breaking them off. I throw them back there. He said, and then I take the sticks. We cut them down to size, put chains on them, and turn them into nunchucks. He was taking all our broomsticks and turn them into nunchucks. But you should see.
Always, even back then.
Exactly. So the whole shit house full of these, just the bristle part of the broom is sitting back of the washer and dryer when we move. So, yeah, go figure. But yeah, kids, it's sad. They're not out there, you know, being physical, doing anything. Hell, we've had these crazy snowstorms here. You can't tell me, at least I remember when I was a kid, when there was a snowstorm, your ass was out there, you're making snowmen, having snowball fights, you're having fun. Nobody in this neighborhood, and there's tons of kids in this neighborhood, none of them are outside during the snow and all the, that's like, wow, what are you, just inside, just right there on your little pads? And
it's sad now.
Like, yeah, no imagination. You're right, no imagination. This does everything for me. It's like, God, get out there, do something. God, get some energy. It's, I don't know. That's a whole other story. But, well, Jesus, we ran it a whole lot on the Barbarians.
I feel like we haven't touched on Beastmaster enough.
Oh, go ahead. Hit Beastmaster if you want.
No, I just, you know, I know Nathan watched that last night, and I went and just watched it just for the hell of it, just because it's a badass movie. But I just wanted to give, like, a discussion on that before we wrapped it up, because I know we touched a lot on, and rightfully so, but, like, Beastmaster, I feel like, is another one that I feel like I would love to hear some great discussion with you guys before we call it a day.
I mean, we talked about practical effects, and I mean, think about the time and patience and the training that it would have needed for all those animals that are in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, there's minimal, like, you know, when the birds are flying around, like, you get the sort of the cheapness, like, special effects of that, but there's so many things that that would just all be done in a computer these days.
There, and I am watching. I timed it last night. What makes this movie so ballsy is that 7 minutes into this film, we're seeing a witch paralyze a king and queen by their throat and take her unborn child out of her womb and putting it in an ox while they're alive.
Yeah,
and then takes the ox out to the woods, kills the ox, and takes the baby out. Puts a brand on the baby's hand and then attempts to kill it with a knife. 7 minutes into the film, you're not going to see anything like that in today's film. That is balls to the wall guts, man. I mean, it's just, God, this is what makes the 80s so damn memorable and why people, even today, will continue to never, and beyond, I'm sure after we're all dead too, that decade of film will never be forgotten because of moments like that. They are never going to put a scene in a movie where a baby is, I mean, it was just, you know, as a kid, those witches were creepy as hell. I thought it was quite freaky as a child to watch the witch take, you know, concoct this evil spell and take the baby and put it inside the womb of an ox, you know, while they're alive and the king just sitting there watching his wife die during this and can't do anything about it. You know, just really messed up stuff. Not to mention those witches were creepy as hell, too.
Yeah, I really like the visuals in the Beastmaster. Oh. And so, like, I mean, you get a lot of that, like, because the guy that directed Beastmaster directed the Phantasm film.
Yeah.
And, you know, you watch Phantasm, like, gradually they got worse, but that first one was just very, like, foggy and dreamlike and sort of confusing, and you're wondering what's going on, and you get that visual flair in Beastmaster. There were so many scenes that I'm just like, oh, I would go back to Phantasm, and I'm just like, yeah, that was really well done.
I mean, there's so many great miniature shots in Beastmaster. The visuals. One of my favorite images is when Dar comes upon Emor, not Emor. I forgot the name of the kingdom that Mayax is taking control over. Damn it!
If you didn't think that Joe's video quality could get any worse, you're fucking wrong. Because
the '80s with Joe's video camcorder here.
My tablet died. I thought it was plugged in. My fault, everybody. My tablet died, and now I'm on my prehistoric computer.
Yeah, no, I saw in the corner, it's like, Joe joined the call. I was like, I wasn't even looking down here to see that you had even, like, left.
Yeah, it still looked like you were still with us, just your icon was up. It's still up.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't even know.
Joe's in here now.
Yeah, but it's the faker in the other one.
He's duplicated.
Which one's the real Joe?
Dun, dun, dun. Often imitated, but never duplicated. But yeah, so here I am. Sorry about that delay, but I guess you guys said you didn't notice it, so whatever. Now it's just harder for me because I'm trying to click with this, and then I'll have to click to the chat room to see if anything happened, and back and forth. Then I'll have my dual screen.
Well, just trying to
sound much. It almost sounds like he's underwater now.
It's terrible. Wait, do I even have fine? Uh-oh, and I'm creating an echo because of that. I'm sorry, guys. I know it's bad.
I don't hear an echo on my end.
It's me, my bad. See, I'm doing it now and I'm hearing it. Shit, I don't know what to do. You guys talk so I can shut something up.
He's ruined the show.
Unless it's RoboCop, when they're adjusting RoboCop's face and the scientist working on it, he's like, shit! And then he just cuts off. You know? That's what I'm expecting Joe to happen here. He's like trying to screw in something and yells that out.
Well, hey, at least you guys can see that. See, this is the gigantic monstrosity that, well, I'll show the back of it. This is the big old thing that I use to do the podcast normally. So it's old, and that's why it's grainy, but now it's my laptop, which is even grainier. But, shit, sorry. You guys will have to talk because it's too echoey for me, and I think I'm messing something up. It just doesn't sound right. So go ahead.
All right. Well, we'll carry on with our Beastmaster discussion, and we'll call it a day. I love all the beginnings of the Beastmaster too, especially when Dar is grown up and he's got a dog, Kodo, which looked like my dog Hobo, and he was a white dog too with big ears, and it was just it's such a sad scene too when he's dragged off by his dog and his dog died protecting him, and he wakes up and sees him dead and goes back to the village and sees people impaled on giant poles and people dead in the village and all this stuff.
But that
and,
was also like a really cool visual.
It was. It was an awesome visual. It was impactful.
Yeah.
He's the last one and you see all these dead people and he takes it to and lines up all these people in the village all together and the music that's playing and Kodo is the last person he takes and lays him on his father and puts his father's arm over him.
Now, how do you think they did that? Because I was watching it with Emily, and I'm sitting there like, do you think they just sort of knocked the dog out, like injected it with something just kind of make him like fall asleep? Because that's clearly not,
it doesn't look
like that is a real dog that's like knocked out.
Yeah, I'd say they probably could have gotten away with putting him to sleep temporarily just for the moment of him looking like he's dead for that scene. And because I mean the hair on him, the ear moving, when he grabs it one last time, it just looked authentic. It looked real. If that was a prop, they made the best Kodo prop you could ever imagine for a low budget fantasy film like that.
But what a cool part too. It's like he starts to drag him, gets shot with the arrow, and then just, all right, got to keep going. Yeah. Like that was just a really cool moment. I don't know.
It adds a lot of emotion to Dar's character too when he looks up and sees Kodo laying there dead with the arrow in him, and he just gets ready to start break down, and then he realizes I got to get back to the village and sees the whole thing's burned down, people are dead, and for the Jun Horde to take people and impale them on poles and prop them up is like it was almost like that was probably their calling card, you know, to let people know the Jun Horde, you know, destroyed the Emorites. That's what they do. They take their victims and impale them on poles and put them up for the world to see that if you come through there, oh, well, the Juns were here. And They were such cool looking villains too. Not to mention, we can't, and I'm sure, I think me and Joe talked about this before in private conversation, but the group, I don't know what you call them. They're not name checked in the movie, but the group of guys with the completely like kind of solid faces with nothing but eyes and the flaps.
Yeah.
They use to wrap around their victims and digest them with stomach acid or something like that. Don't know what they scared me as a kid. I thought, yeah. Oh my, I don't know what these things are, but to know that they obviously, and I choose to believe that the guy they killed that was in that cage was probably a thief, which is probably why they killed him anyway, or were planning on, killing him at some point, because they clearly, respect the Beastmaster because he's friends with the Falcon. Like, they probably see him as, hey, you're in our home. You know, we don't know who you are. We're going to kill you. But he's friends with the Falcon or the Hawk, and they gave him that medallion to show him that we're friends. That was so cool. And then when he gives him the medallion to take, you know what to do, and they show up at the end to defeat the John Horn. Oh, it's badass, man. Yeah. So cool.
They just don't – it's all a lost art now. And the other thing I wanted to touch on too before, and you had mentioned it earlier, like the artwork, you're like, there's a story to tell there. And like, you can, if I can, like, look at that, like, look up here at Deathstalker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, clearly there, you look at that and like, all right, well, let's tell, obviously none of this happens in Deathstalker.
But that box art.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the cool thing about it too. Like, movie posters these days don't have that thing that makes you like, oh wow, I want to check that out.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Photoshopped. No, like, that's all it is now.
You're right.
It looks exactly the same.
That's true. Tyler and I talked about that before too. But I mean, first, let me say, like, you show that DVD right there and with that art, which, yes, you might as well say that was 80s clickbait. You know, I mean, that was our way of, hey, look at that. And then you grab it like, oh, it wasn't like that. But that is what sucked me to where I wanted to look at Deathstalker. I thought they looked amazing. And the posters, yeah, the movie posters, God, I mean, whether they were drawn like, that, which most of them really were drawn and were epic and beautiful, compared to nowadays, it's like they got either just the name of what the hell the movie is, or they just take a live-action shot of somebody standing there holding a sword or a gun or whatever. Just some of it just looks, eh. I was like, man, I miss the beautiful art that they did for all those posters and whatever VHS boxes, and God, it was just something. Like I said, Toxic Avenger, even the Toxic Avenger had beautiful art for its, box art. That all of them, yeah, pretty much all of them. Hey, think of the National Lampoons, all the Vacation movies, all of those
made to look like Conan. You know,
I love it. Damn, lost art. You're right, literally a lost art.
That we remember were all paintings. Everybody today, if it's an indie film, you need a yellow background and your lead actor with a big beard and some quirky black frame glasses, and that's about it. Even superhero movie posters are very blah, like light vanilla. And I like vanilla ice cream. I'm not knocking vanilla, but that's
what I hate vanilla. About. I don't like vanilla.
So why aren't they hiring, Joe Jusco, who still does paintings and artwork for Marvels? Why aren't they getting him to do the latest Marvel release movie? Why aren't we getting a nice, big, beautiful painted poster of Black Panther or Infinity War instead of like a collage picture of, here's Chris Pratt, here's Iron Man, oh look, here's Spider-Man, oh look, there's War Machine, oh look, there's this guy, and that guy. It's just paste everybody here instead of this beautiful painted poster, because when people think of Back to the Future, Master of the Universe, Jaws, the Star Wars films, all those were done by like Drew Struzan and Roger Castile, who did the Jaws poster and one of the Empire Strikes Back. I mean, they're just such the Harry Potter poster. I'm not a Harry Potter fan, but a lot of those were painted posters done by Drew Struzan.
I think the first two were, and then after that, it turned into Photoshop, putting characters standing around.
There you go. Nathan clarified it. They went the cheap right after the first two films. But that's the thing, is that you see those on display at your local movie theater, where it's at the mall or downtown theater or whatever. That looks like, oh, man, just that artwork alone, that tells me that this is going to be an ass-kicker of a movie. And they don't want to pay artists to paint this beautiful painted poster of the latest superhero movie coming out this summer. No, we're just going to slap an image on there. I mean, who wouldn't want to see a beautiful painted poster of the latest Spider-Man movie? It's just, no, it's Spider-Man laying there with a set of headphones and with New York behind him. Boring as hell. There's nothing energetic about that movie poster, even though the movie wasn't that good to begin with anyway. But still, it's that's what makes these 80s films so great too, is like, even on VHS, they took the movie posters and put them on the VHS as well. Like Conan the Destroyer, it's not a painted poster. It's got a little bit of painting in there, but that epic shot of Arnold from the waist up holding the sword, Grace Jones lying there kind of looking sexually, but also looking like someone you do not want to mess with. You got Queen Tarama standing there looking defiant. Bombata's looking there, trying a small painting of Conan on his sword holding, you know, with his hand out. The first Conan movie, the beautiful painting with Conan holding the sword, a helmet, and Valeria. Red Sonja is a painted poster, for God's sake, and it looks epic as hell. Willow is a painted poster. Clash of the Titans. Both posters for Clash of the Titans are both painted posters. Two different artists, but like, God, they look so awesome. And no, we don't have time to do that. We got to give my nephew a chance to Photoshop a poster so that way I can sit there and say I'm Uncle of the Year. So I have put together the latest Infinity War Part 2 poster here with like this Photoshop of Josh Brolin sneering at Robert Downey, because we sell the poster with Robert Downey, not Iron Man. Oh, God.
Yep, real quick. I'm glad you said that. I just had to look up for the new Conan the Barbarian movie that came out in 2011. Oh, yeah, right. God, it's a bunch of the actors standing there or scenes from the movie. It's like, yeah, this looks fantastic. What a pile of crap. Isn't that terrible?
What a piece of crap.
What a piece of crap.
It is, but... All right, well, go ahead. Well, before we wrap it up, we're going to be wrapping up here soon, but Nathan, you got to tell us all what to do, what the fans do, about clicking subscribe and places to go and all that.
Yeah, well, now we're on the Beyond Retro channel, so, you know, make sure you subscribe the 5, 6, 7 people that popped in here, which I'm sure they've already subscribed anyway. Pop Culture Network. All the episodes get embedded on there, and then about a week later, we're on Podbean. So if you don't want to look at our handsome faces, you can just listen to our sexy voices instead.
That is correct, nipples, you know, as you're driving home from work, or maybe our discussion on Barbarians will get you pumped and go to the gym or something like that. But yeah, let us massage your ears there with our discussions about what's wrong with current movies and why the stuff. We're not stuck on nostalgia. We're not stuck in the past. They just got it right, and no one today can get it right. So I don't want to hear any of this crap. You guys are just stuck in the past. Like, no. I'm sorry. They got it right. Can't they repeat what they got right 30 years ago? No. Can't do it. Nope. I don't want
to. Yeah, that's true. They can't. Like, they take these properties from 20, 30 years ago and try to redo them, and it just falls on space every time.
Yep.
Like, Ninja Turtles can work. We gotta make it like Transformers. We gotta make it, and I'm like, whatever.
We're in a Transformers movie. It'd be great. The kids would love it. Man, this is great. We need balls on a Transformer. It'd be great. We make some toys that are selling some balls on a Transformer.
Well, for example, real quick, Nathan. I mean, for example, because, you know, some people would say, and you figure if anybody would have hated this, it would have been me. Think about that Friday the 13th remake that came out. I loved it. I love that Friday the 13th remake. I didn't think that it completely sucked or was wrong. I loved it, so I'm not living in the 80s.
It didn't, because at least you felt like they were taking it, they were paying homage to what people like Jason
Sutherland. They did a good job, yeah. They did a really good job.
Things can work. Friday the 13th worked. Nightmare on Elm Street, not so much. Yeah, Texas Chainsaw Massacre,
it could have worked.
But there's other things that come out, and the majority of it's just shit. I don't know what gets lost. Like, you know, you see interviews with them, and they're like, "Oh, I'm a fan of this." I'm like, "Are you though? Because you wrote this in a way that makes it seem like you're not. It makes it seem like someone paid you." And then here's another side rant: it's what's wrong with wrestling today? Like, Vince has it in his head that he has to have television comedy writers to write his wrestling shows. And you know what? It's awful. The promos now, like, sound scripted, because they are, and they have to follow the script. It worked before because there were just simple guidelines. It's like, get this point across. However you want to say it in between, do it. Let your personality shine. Now it's like, nope, you got to read these words. Exactly. And it's just, more lost art. Like, what the fuck is happening to everything? Like,
yeah. Touch on what they said about wrestling too. It worked. They made an empire out of letting these guys get themselves over, you know, with awesome interviews and good wrestling, and not trying to dictate everything they did. You know, you had three guys, but you had Vince McMahon, Pat Patterson, and Bruce Prichard for the most part in the late 80s and early 90s. Three guys booking all these monumental, memorable matches and promos and stuff like that. It made them all tons of money. It put Hulk Hogan, we're still talking about Hulk Hogan even today because of of what little work was done and just letting these guys do what they want to do. They had good ideas, they had bad ideas, but they weren't bringing in Freddie Prinze Jr. and all these other people from Hollywood to help try and get Dolph Ziggler over. You know, look at Dolph Ziggler, the guy should be able to get over just looking at the guy. That's why when he first showed up, I thought, I'm going to like that guy. And then sure enough, you know, I lost interest with not just with what they were doing with him, but how they were booking heels and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's a disaster, and they still can't figure out why it's not as big as it used to be. It still could be. Because wrestling is no different than watching a great action movie. We all know it's fake, but give us a good match. Give us a believable babyface and a kick-ass heel to get behind, and you want to see him vanquish or see the heel, you know, take out the baby. It still can work. I don't care if it's fake or not, but you know what? You bring in Alberto Del Rio for the upteenth time, like, dude, I don't care. Stop trying to force him down our throats.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah. Aside from that, Facebook, Beyond Retro on Facebook. You can follow us on Facebook because that's how most of you guys find the links to these shows to begin with. I'm terrible at this closing.
I love it. Nathan was just like, yeah, and you can find us on Facebook because we're on Facebook.
It's no different than that one time you did the intro and you're just like, welcome to Beyond Retro. I'm Tyler and we're gonna talk about some stuff today, I think.
I didn't do that.
Yeah,
you can see these two going at it all the time.
No, it's like I turned over to Nathan. Yep. He never
shows up. Well, I mean, like, how am I supposed to
deliver
it to him? It's like, I mean, it's like search for us on Facebook. Joe Amato, Tyler Baker, Nathan Kennedy. I'm sure, like, if they go to the Beyond Retro page and see something that got posted and looked at the likes, we're probably on there because we all like the stuff all the time.
You know what? It sounded like Nathan was reading from a script when he was doing the first our closing. Go to Facebook because we're all on Facebook. And, yeah, we're on Facebook. He's reading from a script, people.
Yep. I got it. I got it right here all written down.
He's supposed to get himself over here.
These two are going to fight after the show.
Yep, I'm going to drive to his house because he's about 7 minutes away. I'm going to drive to his house, kick his ass.
Yeah.
All right, well, there you go. Nathan pretty much wrapped it up of all the places to go, and I always want to say for everybody in the chat room, thank you for joining us. I'm sorry I didn't get to everybody that was talking, but I did mention your names. You were doing a lot of good rambling back and forth, which we love. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Because we enjoy it too. We do our side rants. We love doing that. So when we get on a side rant, or hell, when we get a little too nuts, might not get everything. So, but again, we appreciate you guys being here.
And I'd like to all these films we talked about today that we will go back and actually dedicate an episode to: Conan the Barbarian, The Destroyer, Red Sonja, Beastmaster. And I haven't seen all of them, and I don't know if I could actually sit through them. But the Deathstalker films, too. God, man.
Be honest. They're not good. I seen it for the press.
Little I've seen, I'm like, I could not justifiably. The only way I could sit through those is if Nathan was sitting with me, he'd had a couple of beers, and it makes fun of it the entire time. That's the only way I could sit through those films.
You can hit mute. You can actually hit mute while it's on, because nothing that's going on is even anything of good or substance. But you could just see all the breasts. That's all I want you.
I'm sorry. I'm not doing it. Who am I kidding?
I think it was fun for me.
The breasts were fun for me. That was it. But That's all I wanted to see. I just another naked girl. This is fantastic.
No, it's like every 2 minutes, someone's naked.
Yeah, so you want a good
shot of an ass.
Yeah,
so like, there's one thing where it's a cut, and then the next scene is just like zoomed in on someone's ass.
That was as close as a kid probably could get to porn back in the 80s without seeing porn. You're excited, kid. That's it. But, all right, well, I think,
guys, while we're talking, since I got all three of us here, And I just thought this was like maybe a fun topic to discuss at some point. And it just made me think, because I was like, I pictured Nathan in the situation. But American Gladiators, I would love to discuss that show with you guys, because I was just thinking, like, picture Nathan as a contestant on American Gladiators. And it just his behavior and mannerisms, like, you know, it just, oh my, I just started laughing to myself. And I was like, God, this would be genius to have Nathan on Gladiators.
Well, how about this? Next week, let's do American Gladiator talk. How about that for Beyond Retro? We do American Gladiators.
All right.
Sure.
I can talk about Mike Adamly for an hour and a half.
All right. Pretty good.
Okay. Yeah, we can do that. But yeah, we can talk about our favorite gladiators and our favorite events and stuff like that, and how Rico was on there at one point. You know, people who love Rico and Billy and Chuck.
No, Rico Constantino.
Yeah. So yeah. Well, that wasn't planned. I just was throwing that out for you because I just thought it was a funny picture.
And that's why it's so good when we do our side rants, because something comes up you don't expect. So there you go. We got our topic without even trying. When we thought we were going to close the show, we didn't close the show. We went to something else, and bam. There we go. We got next week.
We can also spend the first half of next week's episode talking about our experience at Mad Monster Party, because we're going to be at a convention.
Freddy Krueger and part of the cast of Aliens when we record next week. So,
you know, that makes me not even want to say goodbye to you two shits, because I've never been to that. I almost just want to hang up right now. That's a bunch of crap. I've never been there. Probably never will be there. But thanks for rubbing that in the fucking wound right there. Just get all the salt.
Oh, yeah, as if, like, Joe doesn't have plenty of times to rub in stuff that he's done and gotten over my head. And, oh, wait, by the way, did I tell you about my attorney, how I got the attorney of place at Tyler?
Well, that's not the same as meeting all these celebrities in person.
Thoughts here.
He gets to meet all these people in person, so does Nathan. That's not even the same comparison. Oh, you guys just made my shit list for the last 2 minutes of this episode. Thanks. All right, love all you guys listening. But, yeah, see you guys next week.
All right.